So Sarah asked me to give a talk to present to Kalan a little while ago. And I'm going to tell a story from back in January that relates to a koan. And my oldest daughter, whose name is Ellie, she was 20 in January, and she was home for spring break, Christmas break from college. And we were going to go ski mountaineering up in the mountains for 3 days. And we are a ski family, and she'd never been ski mountaineering before. She'd done a lot of mountain climbing and a lot of skiing, but to combine the two, we had to rent equipment for her, which is, special bindings that release in the back, and then for uphill, and then for downhill, you clip them down, and you can ski parallel downhill. And to go uphill, you'd have to put these skins on the bottoms of your skis. They used to be seal skins with the Native Americans. And then when you get to the top, you take them off and you go down. So we made a reservation at a place called Janet's Cabin, which is near Vail Pass. And we drove up there. We were going to spend 2 nights. And we start out at the base of Copper Mountain. So we put on our stuff, our packs and our... It's a very equipment-intensive operation. And it's January. It was cold. It was like in the teen or in the single digits when we were on the way up. But we got going, and it took about 3 hours to get up to Janet's Cabin, which is at an elevation of 11,600 feet. Which is just right as you're breaking through timberline and up into the alpine zone where there's no trees at all. You know, we got pretty tired on the way up. Had to take plenty of rests, and but finally got to the cabin well before dark, so that was good. These are 10th Mountain Division cabins. They're very large, like, whole round logs, you know, that they build them, they like helicopter them in there and stuff, and they're beautiful. And they sleep 20 people, and they have like a giant wood stove on the main floor. And we got there, and there was nobody else there. It was just me and Ellie. And it was just eerily quiet, you know, just silent. And it was so beautiful. About a foot of fresh snow had fallen a couple days before, well, we went out to go skiing. So I was kind of hoping that I wouldn't have any cell phone service there. But I looked at my phone, I had one bar. And I had a message from Sarah. And the message was, this was a Wednesday. She said, "Would you consider giving a talk on a koan on Monday?" Because Jared was going to give a Wayfaring Mind talk, and his schedule has changed, and I'm wondering if he would like to give a talk. And we had talked about my giving a talk a little while before that, so I agreed. I sent her a message back saying, "Okay, I'll do the talk." And then I thought, you know, I've never given a talk on a koan before. Like, I don't know how to do that. And I have no resources here. Like, I don't have koan books. And I don't have notes from when I have studied koans over all these years and stuff, you know.
Clay, would you want to tell the new folks what a koan is?
Sure. There are a lot of new folks here.
The old folks, too.
So... Koan is sort of a short, oftentimes a conversation or interchange between two people that are usually come from a long time ago in China, like 1,200 years ago, and they were written down. And they are these paradoxical statements that typically don't have real clear answers that the logical mind could sort of reason out. And check my time. I may be like a little time limited in terms of how long I can sit up here for, so we'll see how that goes. So my next question was, well, what koan would I want to present? Because there's hundreds of them. And I, like I said, I was just there in this like retreat-like setting with my oldest daughter and nobody else around. It was just almost perfect. It was like, wow. One thing that I realized right away was, well, when doing koan work, the best place to start is with my own experience. And the best way to do that is to pay attention to what's happening. So I said, okay, I can do that. And I realized like lots of things were happening. That they had already been happening before I started thinking about a koan. The koan I picked the koan I picked is called Sun-Faced Buddha, Moon-Faced Buddha. And of all the koans I could have picked, this one was the first one to come to mind. And David Weinstein, and I studied this koan many years ago, and oftentimes with koans he would say, first thought, best thought. Meaning like, you're confronted with this sort of don't know how to do this kind of thing. Oh, what do? Your first thought is sometimes, can be a very helpful thought. So I decided I would go with Sun-Faced Buddha and Moon-Faced Buddha. And this koan is very short. The title of the koan is called Master Ma is Unwell. And the text of it goes, Master Ma was unwell. An administrator from the temple went to see Master Ma and asked him how he was feeling recently. Master Ma said, Sun-Faced Buddha, Moon-Faced Buddha. This koan has kind of a natural fit for me in a sense because I've had a lot of like light and good things in my life, and I've had a lot of dark and difficult hard things in my life. And so that's kind of the theme of the koan. So as I started to think about paying attention, I realized that some cool things that are even happening. And one of them is when you're backcountry skiing, you develop this rhythm. You just go one step in front of the next, you know. And you're getting tired, and so you just kind of let go of some of your regular resistance, perhaps, or thoughts. And I find it really easy just to fall into the rhythm of skiing. And your poles go by, and your skis go by. And you know, you do this for hours, so you can just relax into it, really. Till you get so tired, you have to take breaks. So that night, we passed a very quiet night, and we got up and had breakfast, and we went out for a ski tour in the morning. And Ellie was kind of whooped from the day before, so we tried to go out kind of horizontally, away from the cabin. The setting is just spectacular. There's this really beautiful cabin, and then there's kind of a ridge up above it, and then up above that, there's this like 12,500-foot peak is completely white, and there's this big, you know, kind of lead up to it, just sort of gradual slope up to it. So we kind of go out to the side, and then we come back and kind of start up this very gradual ridge. And a lot of the time we're breaking through fresh snow, which is kind of a fun feeling. It's very light, and there's haven't been any humans there, you know, it's all just pristine. And I start to notice, like, on this gradual ridge, and there are these tiny little cornices on the snow that are only like an inch high, they're formed by the wind, and they have these beautiful little icicles that stick off them like this. I've never noticed this before. I'm like skiing along and crunching and like this, and I'm like destroying nature's beauty, and it just struck me like how much there is there to see when you start to look. So the next thing I really noticed was seemingly above tree line there's a tree, and it's this short little tree that's about 5 feet tall. You know, you've been skiing for a while, and it's been blasted by the wind for like decades, and it only has branches on one side, and it's sort of partially covered in snow, and out of the snow are coming these like beautiful little pine, they're not pine needles, they're actually fir needles, and they stick upright, and they just look so stiff and stout, and they're like saying, you know, you can throw about anything at us you want to, and we're going to survive. You know, we're here at sub-zero temperatures, 50-mile-an-hour winds, snow most of the year, and this tree is just keeps on keeping on. So we keep skiing, and we decide that we're going to go over, there's a little saddle and a little pass on whatever side that is of the mountain I was talking about. And it takes like 20 or 30 minutes to sort of ski over there. And I start to think, this kind of ski touring, especially above tree line, they do in Europe a lot. And the tree line's a lot lower there. And it's called randonnée in Europe. And here they just call it like AT or back in Houston. But they have this whole hut system there, and then they have these big tours, and they go to famous places and stuff. Anyway, I start thinking about a friend of mine from college who is from Switzerland. And we had a mutual friend, named George, who we're both still in touch with. And he had told me that Neil, you know, was married and had kids, and they went skiing in Zermatt, which is like big ski area in Switzerland. And we had skied together in college, and he was a really good skier and really loved skiing being from Switzerland. And I was thinking, I wonder if he does this kind of skiing, you know, with his kids, if he gets to go out and experience this kind of thing. And I was like, pretty sure he did. And I remember this trip that we had taken together with George, and we had some really painful experiences on this trip. And I wish I could take back some of my actions from then. I was like 20 years old, and I did some things that I regretted. And it turns out our friendship just kind of dissolved. You know, after that, we really didn't spend much time together. We really didn't talk about it. Sort of took the path of least resistance. We haven't talked to each other for 30 years since we graduated from college. And when I was talking to George a year or two ago, he said to me once, he said, you know, the subject of Neil came up in his trip we had taken, he said, you guys had, we had so much fun together and so many good times, it's just a shame that, you know, a couple of hard times have to ruin all the rest. And I was just like, gosh, that's so true, you know. All that happened when I was skiing this little saddle, you know. So from the saddle we skied back down to the hut, and we had lunch and we took a nap. Then we started hearing these noises outside, and these people started coming into the cabin. And so it turns out that night there were 17 guys who showed up from Suffolk County to come spend the night in the cabin with us. And they came ready to ski and ready to party. And they had a lot of food and a lot of beer and a lot of wine and a lot of whiskey. And they were really good guys, and they take this trip every year. Like, so happened that they just coincided with us this year. They were very apologetic about, like, completely invading our space. And there was actually this weird double booking thing that went on that was sort of confusing. And we weren't supposed to be there at the same time, but we were. So they were, some of them were younger and just gung-ho about skiing, and they were, one of the fun things you do at these cabins is you go and you ski laps up in the slopes up above, and there was all fresh snow up there. And so what you do is you put on your ski skins and you climb up to 200 feet, and then you take them off, and then you ski down through the powder. And then you put them back on and do this again. And so I tagged along with them, and we skied laps until it got dark. And at the end of our ski, this one guy named Todd just said, "Man, those are really beautiful turns." And I went, "Thanks." I said, "I'm old school about it. I don't go very fast, but I try to get everything out of each turn." And these days, the thing is to go fast and not take very many turns. And when I learned, he took lots of little turns like this. And powder skiing is just one of the most joyous things that you can do if you know how to do it. Because it's just like floating from turn to turn through this powder snow. And the powder snow is kind of wafting up, you know. And it's just such a thrill. You feel like you're in a magazine, you know, you're just like, just feels like, ish, that it's perfect in some way. And you get down to the bottom and you look up this little like swiggly line and you know it's yours and you're like, yeah, I did that, I was great. So, right after that, I walked into the like foyer boot room is what it is, and I was taking off my ski boots. And one of the guys next to me introduced himself, and his name was Blaze. Mm. And I said, "Oh, did you spell that with an S or with a Z?" And he said, "I spelled it with a Z." And I said, "Oh, I had a really good friend named Blaze, and he spelled it with an S. And he died 2 years ago of leukemia." And I did my first hut trip ever with Blaze. And we went snow camping in California sometimes. And anyway, I just thought that was sort of a weird coincidence, you know? You know, that night there was some socializing and some carrying on. And I was sort of like making sure my daughter was okay. 17 guys from Southern County. She was doing fine, you know. We kind of packed it in early to our room upstairs. And the next morning, I got up early to go do the early morning ski to just sort of stretch out and loosen up, which is what I do every morning if it's walking or skiing or whatever. And I went out along the same track that Ellie and I had taken the day before, just along the horizontal track that wasn't really very difficult. And on the way back, it hit me that was Friday, and we were going home because Blaze's widow and his two kids were spending the night with us that night. And you know, I just put my hands on my ski poles and just cried. Because I just miss my friends so much. And we were friends for 30 years. And you know, I wouldn't go do this with them again. Neither of those kids. Those kids are like 12 or 14. So, that was our last morning, And Ellie and I packed up, and we went out and did one more little tour. And we got back to the cabin, and we loaded up our packs, and prepared for 6 miles of downhill skiing, and a lot of poling along the way. And it was longer to get out than it was to get in, because you got to take one of the ski lifts up for free, and then ski over the trail as part of the deal on the way in. But on the way out, it was just like, you had to do the extra last 2 miles, and we were just spent. And it was extremely tired. And we were like, God, when is this going to be over? So we're driving home, and my phone had died up there, even though I had it in airplane mode. And I charge it up in the car, and I notice that I have a message from Sarah. And the message says, well, Jared's schedule changed, and now we can give the Wayfarer my talk on Monday, so you don't have to give the, you don't have to give the talk on Monday night without a phone. And,
I can hand it off to Jared now?
And so I, but I've been thinking about it a lot, you know, and I'd had these experiences that were very touching, and so I went home and I made a few notes and I recorded it on my phone, and then I had it transcribed, so I have a transcription of it. And that's really my talk. So I just wondered if you guys had any, you know, responses or questions.
Well, like, how did it tie into Samuel?
Thank you for asking that. I didn't want to just go and explain it right away.
Sun face food and moon face food?
Yeah, so for me, it's just like whatever I was doing, just really feeling it and sinking into it. Like, those darn little courses, you know, with the ice poles on them, just like going, wow, those are just the coolest thing, you know? And then seeing the tree, just the way it was, surviving up there. And then, you know, outer scene, like, what gets sunnier than that? And little experience, and then the other experiences of my friends, you know, just like these really difficult, painful times. The other side, you know, the darker side. And I wasn't thinking that all the whole time, you know, but when I sort of took a step back and started looking at it, I was like, oh, those experiences are sort of talking to me about the koan. Helping the koan make sense, or helping the koan. Koans are experiential, so that was the experience of it.
So it was sort of a, this is what, it's just whatever it is, what it is. Sometimes you're a sun-faced Buddha, and sometimes you're a moon-faced Buddha.
Yeah, so Master Ma is sick, you know, and someone asks him, how have you been recently, you know? Master Ma is one of the most famous Zen teachers of all time. he just gives a response. Says, I'm just doing the way I'm doing, you know? That little trip with my daughter was really great. And to be with her and to be in the mountains, you know. Backcountry skiing at high altitude is like my favorite thing in the world. It's just the most beautiful, and you're so far away from it all, and so it doesn't surprise me that I've got to have these really cherishable experiences, you know. But also to kind of put them in context of what sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha asking of me, you know. How does it relate to my life? if Sarah called me and asked me to talk about a koan like in 5 days, you know. But she did, and so that's just the way it all fit together. And then I didn't give the talk. At the end of the talk, I said, so this is the first koan talk that I never gave. I wanted to write it down anyway.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm hogging the conversation, but I've not done this koan. And so I'm curious for anybody who did, who has, like a moon face to me, here's the logical reasoning part, which isn't how you typically approach it, but a moon face doesn't seem gloomy. It's just like a cool face, but it happens to be dark outside.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if anyone else had a different take on it or what your takes were.
So there is a little bit of mythology behind that. Sun-faced Buddha lives for like 1,000 years. Sun-faced Buddha lives for 1,000 years. A moon-faced Buddha only lives for 1 day and 1 night. So it's a very short time span. And much as Clay discovered, I find that there's times when it's like really intense or difficult. And, you know, time can get kind of compressed, and there's other times where it's really easy and kind of beautiful. And, you know, imagine that when you're sick. So the last couple of times I was sick and had nausea, and was actually, pardon the graphicness, vomiting. It was the first time that I didn't get all caught up in, I hate this, my stomach is contracting, stuff wants to get out, why do I have to go through this? And it was like, yeah, what? And then it was like, oh, what a relief. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take your pick. Maybe it goes from moon face to sun face in that case. It strikes me the really interesting thing is they're both Buddhas. So to me, what that says to me is even in the very dark and struggling times when it's probably the hardest for me to see that there isn't something wrong here. It's just my life. It's just my life. Mm-hmm. And there is something precious even in that. Granted, it's much easier for me to see that looking at it from the other side, reflecting that. Maybe once in a while, we're in the midst of that. I think so. Yeah, it's just my life.
Thanks.
This too.
That's what I meant when I said to really feel it, you know.
Yeah.
Just having those experiences and not turning away. And, just having your life.
Yeah, kind of on that. I felt like in your story, in your description, I feel like there's a commonality with the trails, like the little curve, kind of
switch
your own paths, and how beautiful that was, and how kind of taken by that you were during that sun-faced Buddha time, right? And you're like, oh wow, like this is perfect, and you just look back on that. And I kind of felt like there was a commonality of beauty in the sense of you being extremely sad and like reflective on your friendship, like there was still that path that you had with him, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's really nice.
And so you're still reflecting on both, like, kind of the curves and of the paths.
Yeah. And right after that, the guy got introduced himself as Blaze. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, Blaze is here.
He's just still with you. Yeah.
And I hadn't thought at that time about his wife and kids from the state for us the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it didn't connect to me yet. I don't know. Maybe. It was partly because of this influx of all these people. It was just, you know, they were extremely social and loud and having a really good time. It was kind of nice to have the contrast, actually, one of the quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have these ski party guys there. Who ranged in age from like 30 to 65.
Mm-hmm.
It was like this big age.
Thank you, Clay.
Thank you, Ed.